The following audio is via a Skype call.
Don't you have some kind of a line that you keep open for emergencies or for celebrities? I'm both. I'm a celebrity in an emergency.
TGIF, it's Manson Mitchell with Gary Manson, Suzanne Mitchell. A double shot of good conversation with great guests to jumpstart your weekend. Manson Mitchell, you're on the air.
Thank you, Eric Kramer. Hi, everybody. I'm Gary Mance.
I'm Suzanne Mitchell.
We are Manson Mitchell in your ears for the hour of a Friday. And of course, none of that would be possible if it weren't for the yeoman's duty put in by bad boy Benny Mathers at the board. How are you doing today, Benny?
Wow, very well. That was the introduction. I'm impressed.
You didn't know you were a yeoman.
I didn't. Can you enlighten the rest of some of our listeners who have no idea what that is?
Just one of those guys who sees himself as duty bound and, like many ghosts, shows up again and again, even past the time of their death, showing up for duty, like someone on the Queen Mary or the Titanic or perhaps an airplane in the field, and they're there still trying to fly, still trying to keep the ship going in the right direction. So, you never give up.
So basically, once I pass on, that eminence will still be running around here in the studios after I'm gone, right?
That's true.
I'll be lingering the hallways.
And the station will be cool with it because it's unpaid labor.
Right. Bingo. See, it's a win-win.
We're so happy today to be able to talk to Marie D. Jones. She is a prolific author. She is the author of a book that we can't wait to talk about, and we've been diving into it, though I readily admit that there are so many stories here. We are only partially through it, and we said we have more than enough material for this one-hour interview. We're just going to have her back for part two and maybe part three. The book itself is called Celebrity Ghosts and Notorious Hauntings. How creepy, in a good way, is that? Suzanne, do you have some mad props about Marie? We need to get her on board with us.
We do. Marie D. Jones is a fully trained disaster response preparedness member of the Community Emergency Response Teams through FEMA and the Department of Homeland Security, and she is a licensed ham radio operator. She is the author of over 15 nonfiction books on cutting-edge science, the paranormal, conspiracies, ancient knowledge, and unknown mysteries. She is a regular contributor to New Dawn Magazine, Fate, Paranoia Magazine, and other periodicals. She has been interviewed on over 1,000 radio shows worldwide, including Coast to Coast AM. She makes her home in San Marcos, California, and we are very happy to welcome her back to Manson Mitchell, Marie D. Jones. How are you today, dear?
Hi there. I'm doing great. But well, you have an older bio because I am literally up to 23 books now.
Oh, you do? Well, I took that right off the jacket of your most recent book.
Well, that may include the books
that's
published by that publisher.
I actually have three more in the works, too. So I think at some point I need to just slow down.
Okay.
Well, we're delighted to have you with us, Marie. We're going to talk about celebrity ghosts and notorious hauntings. What a wonderful book. I mean, it's just thrilling to go through these stories. It absolutely gives me goosebumps at times. I'm amazed. But before we get into that, Marie, Suzanne and I wanted to give you an opportunity to offer a reminiscence about a dear ghost, and we're talking about Rosemary Ellen Guiley. We did a program in her honor a few weeks ago, and you were otherwise scheduled, so we could not include you that day. And I promised you when we booked you for today that we would make time at the beginning for you to offer any recollections of this wonderful woman and the influence that she had on authors like yourself.
Oh, my gosh. That just gave me goosebumps. Said her name because, first of all, her death for so many people was so unexpected. It hit a lot of people right in the heart because when I first started out and all through my writing career, she was one of the most generous, welcoming people. And I always felt like I was pestering her, you know, Rosemary, can you do this? Or what about this? And she always, you know, corresponded with talked to me, contributed to some of my books. It didn't matter how busy she was. She really, truly believed in what she was doing. wanted to help other people get the information out as well. One of the really interesting things that I remember about her is I was working on a book called Demons, the Devil, and Fallen Angels. It was a book that I had been asked to write from my publisher. That's not normally subject matter I might pursue on my own. A little scary. But, you know, I remember she gave me, like, a really gentle warning, excuse me, about dealing with that kind of darker material and, you know, how to protect myself emotionally and spiritually. And I absolutely loved that. You know, she didn't have to take the time. This is just a few years ago to contribute or to want to give me that kind of personal warning or information. And everyone I know that knew her, she treated them the same way. She never brushed anybody off or looked down condescendingly on people who were just coming into the paranormal field. Not at all. I think she was like our guardian angel. And it's just so weird. People still say her name and it feels like, what? But the thing about her is she left behind this huge legacy of work, which inspires me because I always felt like, you know, I wanted to leave something behind that would outlive me. And that's exactly what she's done. We have a massive body of work of her that it will always be guiding people in and out of the field, you know, and newcomers, and anybody who's interested in a whole variety of things she wrote about.
I believe that to be the case, and it would not surprise you, Marie, to learn that many others feel the same way. It's easy and entirely justified to look upon Rosemary Ellen Guiley as a role model and an advocate for people who want to enter the field of paranormal investigations, especially as writers. And I would say that goes double for women because she understood the way the corporate games are played. She knows the meaning of glass ceiling. And so Rosemary would do her best to encourage women to get involved and not be intimidated by any sort of old boys club, not take no for an answer.
Yeah, absolutely. I agree with that. She was really a role model of mine. And I also feel like she was very fearless because a lot of the things she wrote about were very frightening. And there were a lot of unknown anomalies associated with things like the skin and negative entities. But she went forward into her research, you know, almost fearless. I'm sure she had fear, but it didn't matter. You know, she really was passionate about what she was doing and wanting people to know what was out there and what her investigations and experiences were. So I think she's going to go down in history as one of the greats. And she already has, really, for all of the things that she's done for me. Again, I have goosebumps because we're talking about her.
Well, I agree with everything that you said, Marie, about her going down in history. And she has influenced a lot of people in the paranormal community to keep going and write what they're writing. When we last spoke to her, she was talking about how this was a very early interest of hers, going back to her teen years. And so it was the coming together of her interest in writing and her interest in the paranormal. And she was a hugely prolific writer of over 50 books, I believe. And so it was like a lifetime. It was really her mission in this lifetime. But as you said, it wasn't just selfish. She also wanted to bring others with her and encourage them as well. So thank you for sharing that recollection with her. That was very nice.
Oh, you're so welcome. You know, any props that I could give to Rosemary anytime, I just, you know, she's still one of my role models. And I think she always will be. Even outside of the paranormal, like you said, as a writer, I just love that she just, you know, never stopped. She always had something new to say, and she loved to say it in the context of a book. I can respect and appreciate that.
Gary and I have been reading Celebrity Ghosts and Notorious Hauntings this week, and we have just had such a ball reading it to one another and talking about it and finding things that we did not know that we are hearing for the first time from your research and your work. And I have to tell you, it's a fun read.
It reads like a thrill ride.
Stories of fame, death, and ghostly immortality. And you have so many famous names and locations and stories in here. And we thought, what better way than to, with all the many things that are in here, to touch upon a few of them and give people some idea of what it is that this book is about.
Absolutely. And I do have to say that this was another book that my wonderful publisher, Visalink Press, approached me with. And I thought, oh my gosh, that'll be so fun and so easy. But what happened was there turned out to be 10 books worth of material that I researched. And it then became one of the most fun but difficult books I've ever written, because I felt like, what do I include and what do I leave out? I was so stressed out about it. But, you know, so a lot of the things that are in here, I felt like was really great fun. And I wanted it to be something that people could look at as almost like a manual, a field guide. But let me tell you, there's probably 9 more books worth of material out there, folks. There's a lot of haunted stories and locations and people that I didn't include.
You know, I can believe that. I can believe that you had to leave out an awful lot just to get to this book, which has so many things in it. I'm going to start out with a little bit of a generic question, and I will let you pick whatever spectral image that you would like to answer it. But one of the things that intrigued me always has, and I've never asked anybody this question to my knowledge, and that is, talk about ghosts who are seen in more than one location.
Oh my gosh, I'm so glad you asked that, because that was one of the biggest things that came out of writing this that kind of freaked me out a little too. You know, I'm like, do ghosts travel? Do they have passports? I have to assume. And one of the main ghosts that people see in different locations, we're not talking about, you know, weeks or months apart. Oftentimes people will report seeing the ghost of Vegas, one of our favorite, you know, ghosts, he gets around in several different places at one time. So I start to think, well, okay, are they seeing imprints of energy that he left behind at his favorite places? Possibly, although some people have reported that there's more of a sentience or an awareness of the ghost, that the ghost is being watched. But it just made me wonder, do we have more to do with this than we think? Are we seeing the ghosts of these people in places that we expect to? Or on the other side, is it possible to be more than one place? You know, if somebody goes back to that sort of quantum world where anything is possible and they're existing amongst this field of potentiality, you know, maybe that accounts for them being in different places, different realities at different times, all at the same time. One thing, though, that somebody said to me when I was talking about that was, well, maybe they're seeing the ghosts of Elvis impersonators that have died. And I started laughing. I thought that was hysterically funny. And then I stepped back and thought, oh, wouldn't that be wouldn't that be a riot if that were true? Wouldn't it be interesting if people were reporting Elvis' ghosts, and some of them were, you know, these diehard fans who became Elvis impersonators who passed on, and now they're being seen haunting the location of the person that they most loved? That's a really interesting question. Marilyn Monroe is another ghost that people have seen in several different places. We know that usually a ghost will have a particular place that they hang out, whether it's their former home, a favorite restaurant, bar, a hotel that they stayed at a lot, a graveyard. That's another question. Why are ghosts in the graveyard? Because they could die there. So this book, even though it was fun and I get to report on all these great stories. A lot of questions like that for me that I still don't know that we've actually answered.
Well, Marie, I like the fact that you posit several possibilities about that. And you mentioned one today that I hadn't even thought of. I mean, there is the idea that in another dimension that we can be in more than one place at a time. And then there's this idea that maybe all those impersonators are traveling around in their Elvis costumes. Because I was going to say, if you're seeing all of these Elvis ghosts in Las Vegas, there's probably a very good reason why. But
exactly.
But probably Elvis has been seen in a number of locations besides his home and Las Vegas, and so
yeah,
that really does.
Studio, right?
Right.
You know, the studio that he loved, that he recorded Heartbreak Hotel in. A lot of people have seen his ghost there. That makes sense to me that a ghost would be seen at places that they loved or made them happy, that they might have a hard time saying goodbye or departing from there. But it also could be the fact that they had such strong positive emotional experiences in these places may have left a residue, some kind of imprint that we're seeing. And now people will say, well, you know, it also works for the reverse. A lot of ghosts are seen in graveyards and tragic places, plane crash sites. You know, and so for me, I'm thinking, well, common sense logic says that if I died in a plane crash, that's the last place I'd want to be hanging around. But is it just that on that other side of reality where there are a lot of laws that may be, you know, going on that we don't understand? Because we only understand the laws of physics here on this reality. If something tragic happens, is that energy so powerful that it stays put? And that does explain a lot of ghosts that act like imprints, where they repeat the same behaviors and patterns over and over again, as if they're caught in some kind of loop, like you're watching a scene from a movie that's just being looped over and over again. But that, you know, have a harder time when you hear people report ghosts that seem to be aware that they were being watched and even interacted with the observers. You know, and someone else said, well, if you died, maybe you were still trying to understand or process, and it takes a while to do that. You know, that's another explanation, that you might want to hang on to the place that caused you so much trauma and trauma to the people that loved you, that it takes a long time to process.
You know, one of the things that I heard for the very first time that you said in here is it doesn't make sense that you see a lot of ghosts in graveyards because that's not where they died. And I thought, oh
yeah,
my gosh, she's right. They didn't die there. They died at home. They died in a hospital. They died in a car crash or a plane crash. And yet you see all these ghosts hanging around cemeteries. How odd is that?
It is. And I always go for the common sense logic first. Even though I know that when we're talking about the paranormal, anything goes. So I get being, you know, stuck and imprinted at the place of death, a car crash, a plane crash, what have you. And we know there's a lot of reports of ghostly activity in places like that. Railroad derailments where, you know, hundreds of people died. And I get wanting to haunt the places that you loved or haunting the places that your loved ones are still at, you know, because you don't want to break away from them or you have some kind of emotional bond even after death to those places. Graveyards have always been a sort of a thorn in my side because we don't die in graveyards. You know, unless you're talking about a graveyard groundskeeper who has a heart attack out in the hot sun. Most people die, like you said, at home in a excuse me, in a hospital in a hospice. So why are we not seeing more ghosts in those locations?
Yeah, that's a very good question. I think there's a certain morbidity to it, Marie, so that people go where they are interred because they might attach more meaning to their own remains than the people who have gone through the grieving process, gone through the funereal rites, and moved on. That would be my guess. But you know, I don't know, and I plan on being cremated anyway. So I don't know if they can see me writing with my own dust, like, Dorothy, go, you know, all that stuff, like the Wicked Witch or something like that. That should make a book sometime. But I can tell you this much. I'll tell you this very quick story. There was a medium of my acquaintance who said that she was not haunted, but she was receiving images of somebody in a nearby graveyard because she lived not too far from a cemetery. And long story short, they kept saying that they didn't like the branches over their face. And she said, "What are you talking about? I am laying here with branches over my face." Well, there had been some kind of flooding and an upswell of mud there. And it turns out that she checked it out with the local cemetery, and they said, "We had to remove these caskets because the ground was unstable underneath and there was some flooding in the area, and so they became exposed. And we had to move however many caskets." And in one of them, when we opened the casket to make sure that there was not seepage, not only was there seepage inside the casket, but the body had branches over its face. And so they removed the branches. They corrected that problem and reinterred the body. And this medium friend of mine stopped getting these disturbing images.
Which means that we're aware after death of what's going on with our bodies, even though we may not be in them anymore. You know, we still have sort of a conscious connection with them. I don't know, you know, and that brings up another point. At what point are we no longer our body, and, you know, ashes to ashes, dust to dust? But if we still have that connection, it's a matter of respect. You know, don't sit on my grave. Don't leave branches over me. And that's a really interesting story because, again, I've always had a problem with, when once consciousness leaves the body, what do we care what happens to the physical form? It's not us anymore. But that's kind of an indication that there's still an awareness of something's happening to your physical body.
Well, and there's your argument for non-local consciousness as well, that our consciousness does survive our physical body. And
right.
You know, yeah.
And that expanded awareness might make us aware of many things simultaneously. Our own functioning human brains can handle thoughts so many in succession, and sometimes we have cognitive dissonance, so we're thinking contradictory thoughts, and they give us pain because they are opposite each other, at war, as it were.
Exactly.
So with the expanded awareness and time becoming past, present, and future, more or less melded into one big picture, I'm not quite sure what that would look like, unless we reincarnate and I just forgot there. But with that going on, I can see where people would take the big picture, and something can bother them because maybe they were particularly attached to their bodies. In fact, yeah. I've had people come through, and I'm talking about another medium there, but they actually brought people through, and they would say, this lifetime, I was a very handsome cowboy in Texas. I knew how to bust them Broncos, and I was quite popular with the ladies, and I'm very proud of the way I looked during this particular lifetime, even though...
That would be hard to walk away from, right?
That's right. And so when they present themselves, it's as the handsome cowboy in Texas, even though they might have been a mailman in Philadelphia the lifetime before that.
Right. And you know that.
And I'm sure there are handsome mailmen in Philadelphia. That's not a put down
of
Philadelphia.
Yeah. We're not
mailman. I'm just saying this one particular image.
That actually goes back to, though, how they are ghosts to be seen in more than one places. Because if you think about what prevents that from happening to us here, it's our physical body. But on that side, if it's just consciousness, we hear stories of these yogis in India who have been reported in more than one place at once because they've transcended the physical. So that might actually answer that question.
Well, that would be pretty fascinating in itself. And in India, that's a giant hotbed for that kind of research, especially reincarnation.
Yeah.
I love that.
I think here in the West, we don't have the focus required, to go off for months alone and get inside of our minds and consciousness. We're so distracted here in the West.
I want to get into some specific stories from your book, Celebrity Ghosts and Notorious Hauntings, because there are some really great stories in here. Let's go ahead and take our break. And when we come back, we are talking with Marie D. Jones, and we're going to get into some of the specific stories that she has and more. And stay with us.
It's about the stories, the second half of this hour. So Okay. Stay tuned to Manson Mitchell. It's Seattle's home of alternative talk, AM 1150. We'll be right back.
The preceding audio was via a Skype call.
Staying connected with Gary Mance and Suzanne Mitchell is easy. Just go to mansonmitchell.com for the latest info on topics and guests. Friend Gary Mance and Suzanne Mitchell on their Facebook pages and like the Manson Mitchell Show page at facebook.com/Mance and Mitchell. If you're on Twitter, share a follow with Gary and Suzanne at Mance Mitchell. Join Gary and Suzanne Friday and Saturday mornings at 10 a.m. for an unusual show that covers everything from personal growth to the paranormal.
Here's an amazing act. Here's a tremendous act. Here's a startling act. The amazing, the thrilling, the greatest, spectacular, incredible, exciting, wonderful, world fame, most unusual novelty act.
The home of the A-Team of Alternative Talk is manceandmitchell.com. Heard right here on Alternative Talk 1150 a.m. or streaming live from your computer anywhere.
The Alzheimer's Association and the Ad Council present the story of Tom and Levi.
Tom is the smartest man I know. He's been a professor at two major universities, been a teacher for over 40 years. One day, he told me that he was having problems in his classes. I think one of the students had asked the question and he didn't remember the answer. And I also noticed that he was letting his class out earlier than they were supposed to let out. And he was telling them that he was doing it as a favor to them, but I think in reality, he just wanted to get out of there. I was really starting to worry because I saw something was wrong.
Levi and I talked about how it would change our lives, but he was there beside me, and my love for him was just immense.
When something feels different, it could be Alzheimer's. Now is the time to talk. Visit alz.org/ourstories to learn more. A message from the Alzheimer's Association and the Ad Council.
I'm Gary Mance.
I'm Suzanne Mitchell.
We're a couple of baby boomers who bring you a talk radio mix of metaphysics and music, politics, and pop culture.
And you never know which celebrity will join us for an interesting conversation.
Mance and Mitchell is Boomer HQ, Friday and Saturday mornings at 10 on 1150 AM KKNW.
Your home for alternative talk in Seattle and Western Washington.
Talk radio with a purpose. Alternative Talk 1150.
Welcome back to Manson Mitchell and our guest this hour, Marie D. Jones, the author of many books, and the most recent is Celebrity Ghosts and Notorious Hauntings. This is a very, very fun read filled with lots and lots of entries of famous people and really interesting stories and situations. And I promise that we will get to those stories in just one quick minute. But first, I want to ask you, Marie D. Jones, where is the best place for people to connect with you? A website, get your books, online, social media, anything that you would like to share with our listeners?
So my website is real easy. It's mariedjones.com, and I try to keep it as accurate as possible. Sometimes I forget I have a website. So bear with me. I'm on Twitter as Marie D. Jones, Facebook, Marie D. Jones Author, and Instagram, Marie.D.Jones. So I'm kind of wherever you want to get in touch with me. I try to be in as many places as I can at the same time.
Right. Wherever you'd like to connect. So there you are in multiple locations. Okay.
There I am. Thank God for the internet and social networking. It allows
absolutely
several different locations.
Absolutely. One of the most favorite stories that Gary and I read, and we actually made a note of it because we wanted to ask you about it today. It's the story of one of country music legends, Johnny Horton. And he had made a secret code in much the same way that Houdini did, that said, I'm going to come back to my good friend Merle Kilgore, and this is what I'm going to say. And so he had a secret code that he gave to Merle Kilgore, but that's just the beginning of the story. What happens next is very evidential for the afterlife, and I wanted you to tell that story.
Yeah, this is one of the, I didn't know who that was, but I thought this story was so cool because a lot of celebrities were themselves very interested in ghosts and the afterlife, like Houdini, and they made pacts with people. You know, if I die, I'm going to try to do something so you'll know I'm still there or what have you. So Johnny Horton sang the Battle of New Orleans, North to Alaska, Johnny Reb. From the very start of his career, he had a strong interest in the spirit world, and he often used a medium called Bernard Rick. He would, you know, do some spiritual stuff with him, and this is all from his biography. Excuse me. So he made a pact that when he died, he made this pact with his good friend, Merle Kilgore. He said, I'm going to leave a message for you, a way to communicate. He actually had a feeling that he was going to die when he did this. So 1 week later, he was killed by a drunk driver. He was on his way to a show in Texas. Years later, Merle Kilgore was visiting an old friend who was a radio announcer named Bob Lockwood. So he says he introduced Kilgore on the air, and then he played Ring of Fire, which Kilgore had written for Johnny Cash. Actually, co-wrote it with Jim Carter. During the song, a woman called in. Saint was part of a group of psychics that had been together the night before the show aired, and she had received an unusual name on the Ouija board. The name was Merle Kilgore. On the Ouija board, the same spirit that had written that name had also written, the drummer is a rummer, and he can't hold the beat. Now, that isn't a unique or unusual message. I don't know what is. Kilgore heard it, completely freaked out, because that was the secret code he had created with Johnny Horton before Johnny died. Okay, so it wasn't like the witch board said, hey, or hi, I'm here.
Right.
That's something that nobody else could have possibly known about. I mean, I didn't even know what a rummer was. I had to look it up.
If so the saying was the drummer is a... I'm sorry, Maria. I was just guessing as we read that the other day. I was guessing the drummer is a rummer and he can't keep the beat. Rummer would be the guy likes his rum, he gets drunk, and then he can't keep the beat. He's supposed to be driving song as a drummer. So it rhymed, and that's his way of saying the guy is too drunk to play the drums well.
I mean, what a great message, because we always hear about people, you know, experimenting with things, getting really, even EVP, you know, electronic voice phenomena, getting one or two words, and they can be very vague. But this was a very specific message that I don't think could have been mistaken. And the fact that this lady got it, you know, out of the blue while she was with her friends.
Yes, that was timing.
That would be a very improbable event.
Yes, and that was so intriguing about that one.
Yeah. It's like Johnny Horton knew that, you know, Merle was going to be on a radio show. So he figured, hey, listen, I got to come through somewhere. And that's where it came through.
Let me ask you. Go ahead, Suzanne.
We've heard that before. The mediums, psychic mediums who have a well-developed talent seem to be like little beacons that the spirit world can see from the other side and say, oh, there's a place where we can posit a message. And so it seems as though if you have that skill, that the spirit world is looking to use that to deliver messages. And we've heard that repeatedly on here, where they're looking for somebody who can can hear or see or communicate with the spirit world because they want a message delivered. And so that was the other interesting thing about this group of psychics getting together with the Ouija board, and they're getting Merle Kilgore's name and the message.
Yes.
So to me, that was very evidential.
They had the synchronicities involved too, that they had to, you know, been listening to the radio show or somehow aware that there was going to be this radio show with Merle on it so that they could call in and get through at the exact right time. So it is really, it's almost like it was engineered from the other side. But I do agree with you. I think that there are people that have a great talent to serve as channels between, you know, one reality and another. I think that also kind of plays into people that perceive paranormal phenomenon, where there are a lot of us that don't or can't. So there's something about those people having that ability to be like a doorway. And that just shows you that even on the other side, they may still have laws of physics and laws of nature that they have to abide by on that side. And they need to find that same open doorway there that we're all listening for on this side.
Well, that makes a lot of sense to me.
And to me as well. I'd like to move on to some famous Hollywood ghosts, Marie, in particular. Let's start right up there at the top. Marilyn Monroe, fascinating to generations of moviegoers and idol worshipers. What can you tell us about the spectral visitations of that blonde bombshell who is so famous around the world even today?
I'm convinced that ghosts play around with us while we're on radio shows. That happens to me a lot. Anyway, so Marilyn is one of those multi-location ghosts like Elvis who is seen in positive places, but also in very tragic places. She often has been reported to haunt her Brentwood home. Her tomb, which is at the Westwood Memorial Cemetery in Los Angeles, California, and a very haunted location, the Hollywood Roosevelt Hotel, that I myself have been in. And that location, there's actually a certain room, it's room 229, that her apparition has appeared dancing or walking around. She's also appeared in the hotel ballroom. Are we still on?
Yes. I'm hearing you in the ballroom.
Okay. I'm hearing things. She's appeared by the pool, like posing as if she were, you know, before admiring fans.
Mm-hmm.
Her life was very tragic. Obviously, the way she died was very tragic.
Yes.
And that's why some people touring the White House, which is probably one of the most haunted locations in the world, people have actually seen her ghost walking with the ghost of John F. Kennedy because they were romantically involved. And her death has always had a great deal of mystery about it. How did she die? Was that really the cause of death? So those are just some of the places. Oh, she's also, let's see. Well, she's been seen at certain locations where a lot of other famous legendary actors and actresses have. Almost like they all like to hang out in their old locations when they were at the height of their career. And that would make sense to me. I would do that if I were a ghost.
You'd hang out at your old haunts too, huh?
Your favorite ones, anyway.
I would want to go the places, that I had the most fun, or I'd find my son and I'd want to hang out with him, and he would probably think I was annoying, but yeah. Marilyn also is very often reported being outside of her tomb.
So that's why these places are called haunts.
Exactly. And, you know, you wonder if maybe they're just reenacting the same emotions and experiences in death that they did in life, and that would include the positive and the negative.
Marie, you said that the White House was one of the most haunted places in the world. What kind of ghosts are seen there? I'm assuming Abraham Lincoln, but who else?
Oh, gosh. Lincoln, he sure got around, I tell you. And Lincoln, you know, has his ghost been seen? But colleagues, you know, friends, his wife, and it's not just Lincoln. Obviously, the White House and a lot of the places in Washington, D.C., you know, that are rich in history. Just as we have Hollywood ghosts that hang out, celebrity ghosts, we have a lot of historical ghosts. So Lincoln has appeared all over the White House. He's appeared before his wife, Mary Todd Lincoln. He was supposedly photographed. A lot of people think the photo was a hoax, but Eleanor Roosevelt, while she stayed at the White House, saw the ghost of Lincoln. I thought that was a hoot, because later on, you know, I'm sure people saw her ghost. Let's see. Press secretary to Dwight Eisenhower, press secretary to Lady Bird Johnson. These are people that spent a lot of time there and saw a lot of ghosts of Lincoln wandering around. His former seamstress heard him walking around on the upper level of the White House. And the staff, we have the staff at the White House that would say, oh, it's just old Abe up there pacing. I guess he liked to pace a lot. Other than that, let's see. We have Abigail Adams, who was married to John Adams.
Right.
She would hang out. Yeah, she would hang laundry out to dry in the east room of the White House on warm and dry days. And after her death, her ghost was reported in the same room wearing her usual cap and lace shawl, and her arms would be outstretched as if she were holding a pile of laundry. So that's kind of cool.
You know what I find interesting about that is, in the White House, you know, if you're the first lady, they have people that can do that for you today.
But yeah, maybe not back in the 1800s.
I mean, like a housewife, you know? I find that fascinating.
I know. I guess she was bored and figured, I'll do the laundry.
That is
the ghost of Andrew Jackson.
Andrew Jackson, yes.
Yeah, Harry Truman have shown up. Another first lady that's been seen is Dolly Madison, wife of President James Madison. She, now you just talked about the laundry, her ghost has been seen around the famous Rose Garden that she herself liked to work in. Yeah, you could have people, landscapers, that do that, but she loved this particular Rose Garden so much that people have claimed, garden workers claim, the ghost of Dolly Madison would appear and refuse to let them dig up her beloved garden. And people in the White House would often smell the scent of roses, which were her favorite flower.
I also wanted to get in this. Now, that's the White House, but ghosts of presidents and first ladies can be seen elsewhere, recognizably, it seems. And I'm mindful of the story that you wrote about near Gettysburg, where the ghost of Mamie Eisenhower has been seen. Tell that story.
Yeah, Dwight Eisenhower was president in 1952. He and his wife, Mamie, lived in a farmhouse just adjacent to the famous, notorious Gettysburg battlefield, again, one of the most haunted locations, outdoor locations, certainly. The place was pretty run down when they moved in, but they wanted to stay there as a retreat, and they stayed there till Mamie's death in 1979. It became a National Historic Landmark shortly after that, but also shortly after her death, strange things were being reported by park rangers, landscapers, people working on restoring the area. They would see apparitions of Mamie. They would hear thumping noises and music coming from an empty guest room in the farmhouse. So they brought in a psychic named Ann Gebbin to investigate the farmhouse in 1982. And she spoke with the rangers. She said that she communicated with the spirit of Mamie's former maid, Rose Wood. She talked to other farmhouse spirit, including a little boy and a Native American spirit, both of whom encouraged her to have the Park Service acknowledge the area's historical importance, which they actually did go on to do. So, again, it was, you know, not only communicating with Mamie about her beloved rose garden behind the home and the area that she loved so much, but a lot of other ghost spirits that were hanging around probably from, you know, lifetimes long before Mamie as well. So it's not always the presidents that get all the you know, so the spotlight, the celebrity. Sometimes their wives do.
I find that fascinating, anything to do with the White House. But it seems that when you hear talk of ghosts in the White House, it's never truer than of Abraham Lincoln himself. In fact, I remember hearing this during a press conference that Ronald Reagan held when he was newly installed. He said that his little dog Rex would growl and bark and scratch at the door of the Lincoln bedroom and refuse to go inside it.
Yeah, exactly. There's also a story that the president was watching TV with Nancy, and Rex was standing on his hind legs, barking at something overhead on the ceiling. And so Reagan wondered if the dog was hearing some kind of high-pitched noise, you know, as they do, or perhaps a ghost. And Reagan's own daughter, Maureen, and her husband saw the ghost of Lincoln in the Lincoln bedroom staring out the window. So as we heard before, you know, there were people that would reported hearing pacing coming from upstairs, and that could possibly be what the dog was hearing. So we know it's not just humans that are seeing and responding to this, but their pets too.
That to me is the great lore of all this. I'm just fascinated by it, and it's every aspect of society, from presidents and celebrities to people who just live down the street. It could be, you know, a neighbor, your Uncle Harry, you name it. Amazing stuff. I wanted to give equal time to some of the pop stars of days gone by. To start with, the ghost of Jim Morrison. Apparently a lot of sightings, maybe elsewhere, but in Paris, where he's buried particularly.
Yeah, he's another one that... you know, died young, died tragically, and has been seen in quite a few places. He actually died of a drug overdose in his apartment in Paris, and that's where his ghost is often seen. But he also has his former recording studio, which is Sunset Sound, and a lot of dead musicians seem to like hanging out at their studios. Warren Zevon haunts the cave, where he spent time making records. So Jim Morrison has been seen around the, it's called the, I hope I'm pronouncing this correctly, the Père Lachaise Cemetery, but also the actual apartment where he had the drug overdose and died. So then again, you know, here he is hanging out in a very negative location, the place of death, the place where he was buried, but also the recording studio. And there were some famous photographs taken for Rolling Stone magazine in 2009 that supposedly showed his image behind the headstone. And, you know, there have been a lot of attempts to debunk those, but it's not the first time that people have reportedly photographed dead celebrity ghosts. And I think our natural instinct is to kind of debunk them, but who knows? Maybe they still want to be celebrities even after death.
It could well be, and that reminds me of how much Photoshop messes with you paranormal investigators. You have to weed through all the fakes, which, and let's face it, photos were faked at the dawn of the photographic era, but now with Photoshop, it makes it especially difficult to try to authenticate a photo.
Yeah, it's kind of ironic because the very fact that now everybody, and this goes for the UFO phenomenon as well, the fact that everybody has a camera at the ready, you know, women have their cell phones in their purses and men have their cell phones in their wallets, we have the ability now to photograph something that we see as we see it, instead of, oh, darn, I wish I had my camera with me. This is really cool. I'm going to go to baby shoes. Well, now we can take pictures immediately, but that also means that we're going to get hundreds, if not thousands, of faked, altered, you know, images, videos on YouTube that somebody just wanted to get attention. So even as we now have this wonderful ability to get more data, more evidence, circumstantial as it may be, of paranormal activity, we also have to deal with the fact that there's more of a chance that it could be fake.
With 3 minutes to go, you and I are big Beatles fans, Suzanne, so I guess I'd like to hear about the ghost of John Lennon.
I would too.
All right, let me find it. I literally have to write down things here on what page.
Well, one of the things Paul McCartney said was that they went into a studio when they were filming Anthology, which came out, I believe, in 1995, and they were working on Free as a Bird, a John Lennon song. They were finishing it. They were putting the Beatles touches to it. And they went to some, I forget if it was a synthesizer or whatever musical instrument it was, some keyboard instrument. And long story short, they didn't have to touch it and it started playing. This was something that had not been used in a couple of decades. It just sat there collecting dust and it began to play when they entered the room.
Yeah, no, he again is someone who's been seen at the Dakota building that he was shot outside of, the Dakota Apartments in New York City, but he's also been seen in the studio. Another pop star, Liam Gallagher, who was the lead singer for Oasis, said that he saw John Lennon's ghost while they were recording an unfinished symphony of Lennon's written with Paul McCartney. And Lennon has appeared at the foot of Barbara Darwell, who was a parapsychologist's bed. He has appeared in a lot of photographs that people have taken in all different areas that he's supposedly visited. One of the favorites is the crying lady. When he was alive, he himself saw a ghost called the crying lady wandering down the hallways of the Dakota building. He told his wife, Cynthia, about it and said that he would send her a sign when he died, one that would involve a feather. So in 1986, she claimed she found a jackdaw bird feather wrapped in newspaper tucked behind the fireplace of her home. There's so many different stories of John Lennon's ghost, people that have seen it. A lot of other musicians have spotted him. And, excuse me, there goes my voice. Obviously, Yoko Ono has reported seeing his ghost as well. She said she saw his ghost playing a white piano in the home that they had shared. And that Lennon turned to her and said, "Don't be afraid. I am still with you."
Marie D. Jones, it was wonderful having you on today to talk about celebrity ghosts and notorious hauntings.
We got to have a part two.
And I just wanted to mention that you will be talking about highways, trains, roadways, and other
bridges,
mysterious hauntings again
this
today
afternoon
on American Road Trip Talk.
1 p.m. Pacific time with yours truly. I look forward to another conversation with Marie D. Jones. Until then, have yourselves a great weekend, everybody. This is Manson Mitchell, and you are listening to 1150 KKNW Seattle.
The preceding audio was via a Skype call.